You're listening to a UC San Diego podcast.
Okay. Thanks all for coming, even though it's Thanksgiving. Someone was asking earlier today if there is class today. Yes, there is. So my family is all in Australia, so I don't really care about staying here late. But I'm sure some of you do, so I promise not to keep you for too long. Okay, so where do we get to on Monday? We started looking at advertising, and in particular, we were interested in, well, what actually makes this problem different from everything we've already seen about classification and regression and recommendation. So you already, you know, we already know how to build a classifier that would say, given some historical data that we collected or found somewhere, is a user going to click on an ad, yes or no? Or we could train a regressor that says, how much revenue would we expect to receive if a user does click on this ad? You know, we could train models that would do this given the right data set. We could also train things like recommender systems that would learn the compatibility between a user and an advertisement. So how is the setting of online advertising kind of different from everything we'd already seen? And the way we really explored on Monday is that we have this idea of like budget constraints or something like that, where you can't just recommend everybody exactly the same thing. Like in a recommender system, if you're Netflix, Titanic is the greatest movie of all time, so you recommend everyone Titanic, everyone's happy. In an online advertising setting, well, there's a budget on how much you can show to the user, much like there is for a recommender system, but there's also a budget for how often you can show each ad. So you need to sort of handle these budget constraints in both directions. Not show a user too many ads, not show any one ad to too many users, corresponding to how much that advertiser can afford. And that kind of changed the problem quite a bit. We saw matching algorithms to solve that. But really what we were assuming on Monday is that we can solve these big monolithic optimization problems. We see all the users, we see all the ads and the compatibility between them, and then we can just optimally figure out what's the alignment between users and ads that's going to maximize global revenue or global happiness or something like that. So this is sort of what's called an online algorithm. So this is kind of what it looked like. We have our users and our advertisements. We sort of set this up as a problem where these would be men and these would be women, and then we were trying to marry them to each other. So between each user and each ad, there's some function that says how compatible with the user with the ad, or how much revenue do we expect to get by showing the user to the ad, or how much did the advertiser bid on that ad. And we'd like to just wire these things up such that every user sees exactly one ad, every ad is shown to exactly one user. We'd like to wire these things up to maximize global compatibility. And beyond that, we saw a bunch of extensions, like we don't need to enforce things like monogamy or that everyone gets married, which in the context of advertising means we'd like to show each user between zero and, say, K ads, according to how many we can fit on a web page, and we'd like to show each ad to a maximum of K users, depending on whatever that advertiser's budget is. So that kind of was our answer to online advertising, but it's this big monolithic optimization problem. So what we really need is this idea of a real-time algorithm. So our users and our queries are going to arrive one at a time, but we still need to solve this same compatibility problem. So we're doing exactly the same thing. We still want to satisfy the users and the advertisers' budget constraints, but we're not going to see the whole problem in advance. So this is what's going to be called an online algorithm. How can we solve exactly the same problem, but we see users showing up or queries showing up one at a time? So that's what AdWords does. So AdWords is a particular proprietary system developed by Google. We have kind of the same assumptions in the same setting as what we saw last week. Each advertiser has a budget. We have a limited number of space or a limited number of ads we can show to each user. AdWords is not really actually doing any personalization to a user, so we'll replace the content of a user by a query. So we're trying to have queries coming in one at a time, and we're trying to match up ads to queries. So in AdWords, each advertiser places a bid on certain words. They'd like their ad to be shown, and they're willing to pay a certain amount if to any user who uses certain words in the search bar. as AdWords, okay? And how is it different from what we saw last week? The first difference is actually pretty superficial. In AdWords, you don't pay for impressions, you pay for clicks, whatever. So we can still optimize expected revenue by saying, what does the advertiser pay for a click multiplied by the probability of a click? But yeah, the more key difference is that you don't see all of these queries in advance. So you're still trying to solve exactly the same problem with queries coming in one at a time. So it looks kind of like this. This is just sort of one step of your AdWords optimization problem. There are actually a bunch of light gray lines there, which took me a long time to make this slide, but you can't actually see it. It's a very good slide. Look at the PDF later. So we're trying to solve exactly the same problem where we're matching keywords to ads, but you're going to have keywords showing up one at a time. And what you'd like to get is still the solution that maximizes revenue. So you'd like to get exactly the solution you would have obtained had you seen the whole problem in advance. And that's not going to be possible, it turns out, but you'd like to get as close as you can. So you'd like to have some strategy or some heuristic for assigning keywords to advertisers as they come in one at a time, and then we'd like to measure how different is our heuristic from what we would have got if we've been able to solve the problem in an offline or sort of globally optimal fashion. So here's kind of the input to our algorithm. We're still given this kind of compatibility function, which is a match between query and the advertiser, exactly the same as our use to advertiser function on Monday. And that's, in the case of AdWords, that's how much the advertiser will pay if the ad was clicked on. There's also a click-through rate, which says what's the probability that some query would be clicked on, so some ad would be clicked on given the query. I'll kind of ignore that for the purpose of this lecture. If you can think about it, if I want to maximize revenue, I would just define my compatibility function to be FQA multiplied by click-through rate, right? So you can think of this as how much they're willing to pay for an impression, or you can think of this as how much they're willing to pay for a click multiplied by the click-through rate, depending on whatever it is you want to optimize. Okay, and finally, each advertiser has a budget, and that's going to be for some fixed horizon. They've got to say, here's the amount of money I'm willing to spend on ads over a 30-day period. They tell you that budget in advance, and then over that period, you have to assign ads to them. Okay, so we'd like to recommend ads so they won't overrun the advertiser's budget, and again, we have some limit on how many ads can be returned for a given query. So we'd like to return that many ads, not overrun the budget, and ultimately come up with, again, an algorithm that is going to maximize the total revenue that we receive. So number of ads clicked multiplied by the bids the advertiser's placed. Okay, so like I've been kind of saying at a high level, what we really want to do is come up with a heuristic or come up with some scheme for matching queries to advertisers such that we would come as close as possible to getting the same revenue that we would have if we had solved the full offline algorithm, if we'd seen all of the queries that were going to come in advance and could solve things optimally. So this is going to be called the competitive ratio. It's really just, here's the performance or the revenue you would get if you saw every single query and could, you know, run this complicated matching algorithm to optimality. And here's the revenue that our greedy strategy or our heuristic is going to obtain. Okay, that's about it. Okay, so just for the sake of analyzing this thing, we'll start with a sort of simple version of the problem. We don't have arbitrary bids or arbitrary budgets or different click-through rates or everything. We just have exactly one ad getting shown for each query. That's how much space we have. Every advertiser is going to have the same budget. Every ad will have the same click-through rate. So, I mean, like I say, that's going to be a constant, so we can just pretend it's not there. Every bid is either 0 or 1, so you kind of either bid on something, or you want the query or you don't, and every query costs the same amount. So you can think, showing an ad for a query costs $1, Every time a new query comes in, you can either say, yes, I want that, or no, I don't. And then we're going to sort of assign it to you, assuming you have money, assuming your budget hasn't run out. Okay, so this is kind of the simplest greedy algorithm. I don't even know if it's a greedy algorithm. It's really a random algorithm, pretty much. There's no way to be greedy when everyone's paying exactly the same amount. So every time there's a new query, we're just going to assign it randomly to any advertiser who bid on it who has some budget remaining. Simplest thing you could possibly do, right? So now we can try and measure how good is that compared to how good an algorithm could be. And it doesn't take a super complicated example to see that it's sort of pretty bad. So let's suppose we have just two advertisers, A and B, and they have each a budget of just $2. And A is willing to bid on query X, and B is willing to bid on queries X and Y. So our queries come in, and we get a query X. All right, let's assign it to B. They'll have a dollar left. We get another query X. We'll assign it to B. They're out of cash. We get a query Y, well, no one wants it. We get another query Y, well, no one wants it. Well, B wants it, but they have no money left, so they can't have it. And we made $2. So that's just some random run of our greedy or our random algorithm. Think how well we could have done. So this is greedy. So the optimal solution would have been to assign the first two to A and the second two to B. And that would have netted us $4. So the competitive ratio of how good this algorithm is compared to the optimal algorithm would be sort of 2-on-4 or 1-on-2, right? So this simple algorithm, you can come up with different examples, is going to be, at best, its ratio compared to the optimal algorithm is only half as good as to what an optimal algorithm could be. So, not a very strong procedure, but at least we started to analyze things. So, what can we do better? The first thing we can do is actually keep track of which advertisers have a reasonable remaining budget, and we could try not to let any one advertiser's budget become empty. So let's just, everyone's making the same bid, so our strategy is going to be just, if multiple people make a bid, pick whichever one has more cash left. So how would this do in the same sequence? We have X, X, Y, Y. Now, remember that A is only willing to bid on X, B is willing to bid on either. So the worst thing that could possibly happen is that we assign the first one to B, and they've only got a dollar left over. Then we're going to assign the second one to A, because they both want the ad, and A has more money. And who wanted Y? I guess B wanted Y. So now B has no money, and nobody wants the fourth query. So we're done, and that gives us $3. And this has then a competitive ratio of 3/4 for this example. So that's kind of your trivial proof that the competitive ratio of this algorithm could be no better than 3/4. I won't give the full proof in the interest of time and the interest of how difficult the proof is, but in truth, this algorithm has a competitive ratio of 0.63. It's still this sort of limited version of the algorithm where all budgets are equal and all bids are fixed. But the worst you can do by following this procedure is 0.63 times the best you could have done if you knew everything in advance. So actually, it's a pretty good algorithm, right? You get almost 2/3 the revenue you would have obtained if you'd seen the whole problem in advance. Yeah, not too shabby. Of course, it's still a very oversimplified version of the algorithm. So what's actually going to happen if we have different budgets for each advertiser and they're all placing differently sized bids? In this case, there's only only one query, so not too much could happen. We're basically going to assign the query to A. So a query's come in. Q, 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 Q. A has the bigger budget, so we're going to assign every one of these 10 queries to A until which point the budgets will be equal. So they all go to A, and we get $10. Whereas that's our greedy algorithm. The optimal strategy would have been to assign everything to B, and that would have got us $100, right? So in this case, the competitive ratio is going to be 1/10. This algorithm is 1/10 as good as it could have been if we had assigned things optimally. It's pretty easy to kind of extrapolate from this example, you know, keep this value at 1, multiply the rest by 100, and, you know, you get a competitive ratio of 1/100th or 1/1000th or 1/1000000th. So you can just extrapolate these values up and convince yourself that really, in the limit, the competitive ratio of this simple greedy algorithm is actually 0 once we have different bids and different budgets. So in the worst case, it's really no good. So we've got to fix it. So what are the shortcomings of just assigning all of our ads to whoever has the most budget left? The first is that we're not considering the bid amount at all. So that doesn't make a lot of sense. If our goal is to maximize revenue, we should have some kind of bias towards people who are bidding a lot, not just how much money they have left over to bid later on. So we need some bias towards high bidders. The second thing we need, this is more something you just need to build a real ad recommendation marketplace, is that you'd like to use some of every advertiser's budget so that your small and your big advertisers both get to advertise. You know, if Google has one advertiser with a budget of $500 million and one advertiser with a budget of $50, at the end of the month, we'd rather use 50% of both of their budgets and make, I don't know, $250 million plus $25, rather than using a little over 50% of just the big advertiser's budget. So using just, I don't know, 51% of $250 million. Even though it's more money, it would kind of be bad for the design of an online marketplace because that would allow very large advertisers to simply set the same bids but use a much larger total budget and they could just eliminate smaller players. So whatever, it's not too important for the analysis, but for the sake of building an advertising marketplace, you're going to want every advertiser, big or small, to be able to spend roughly the same fraction of their money. Not the amount of money, but the fraction of money by the end of the month. So the algorithm that Google then uses for AdSense is this one, which just trades off these two terms. We want high bids to be favored, but we also want to give ads to those advertisers who have a large fraction of their budget remaining. So not the amount anymore. So this is going to be a term that just will be useful for the analysis. It's going to range between 0 and 1 minus 0 to 1 minus 1 on E. So 0 if they have none of their budget left over, 1 minus 1 on E if they have all of their budget left over. Really this is just a way of favoring advertisers with a lot of budget left over. The particular scheme turns out to be nice for some analysis, but then we're just going to give the ad to whichever advertiser maximizes the product of these two terms. Okay, and yeah, if you care about click-through rates and things, you can just multiply this expression by the click-through rate of the corresponding query in the advertiser. Okay, so that's it. That's kind of AdWords. The proof, which is a very deep proof, is that this has a competitive ratio of 1 minus 1 on E. I'll let you look at the AdWords paper if you're curious to why. But the really, really surprising thing, the really complex proof in that paper is the one that says there is no online algorithm with a better competitive ratio. So this pretty trivial kind of almost greedy strategy of multiplying these two things together, there is no algorithm that could, there's no other algorithm that does better than that. That's kind of an optimal way to assign ads to advertisers in an online fashion. It comes as close to the offline algorithm as you possibly could come. Okay, so that's basically AdWords. We want some algorithm to match advertisers and users and to incorporate budget constraints. We saw the offline version of the algorithm on Monday, and now we're trying to do the same thing online. And we want this algorithm to be as good as the offline algorithm in the sense that it should obtain the same solution if we have been able to see all of the data in advance, which is what the competitive ratio captured. And AdWords is some specific scheme between that tries to favor high bids while balancing advertisers' budget, and it achieves a pretty good competitive ratio, which is kind of close to 2/3, and there is nothing better you could possibly do. And that's AdWords. Okay? It's basically the full story. There's a couple of other weird details that make AdWords slightly different from this nice version that they analyze in the paper. One is that actually AdWords uses a second price auction. So you place all these bids, and rather than the winning bidder paying the amount they bid, the winning bidder pays the price of the second highest bidder. You know, I'm not an economist. Apparently this is a nice kind of auction. I don't know if anything in the real world uses it besides AdWords, but this is, I think, what's called incentive compatible. Is that the right word for it? Anyone remember? So in the real world, if you were to run a second price auction, that makes people want to bid the real value they have of the good. So if the person who bids the highest has to pay the amount they bid, then there are reasons that people want to game that kind of auction and to sort of bid falsely in a way that differs from how much they actually value the item. Apparently, that doesn't happen for second price auctions. So there are some nice theoretical properties or game theoretic properties of this kind of auction, apparently. Ask an economist. The second way that AdWords actually differs from this nice analyzed version is you don't quite bid on a keyword in AdWords. You bid on, well, you bid on keywords, but then Google does something to them. They say, well, we'll give you things that are similar to these keywords. So they can return queries that have a superset or a subset of your keywords, or queries that use sort of words that are synonymous with your keywords, which they call broad matching. Okay, so that's kind of, that's AdWords. Make sense? All right, let's keep going. All right, so what have we done so far, including on Monday? We've covered kind of, we've got two pieces of this advertising puzzle. We need these algorithms that match budgets between users and advertisers, and we need to be able to solve them online. So this was kind of matching algorithms, and this is kind of what AdWords is doing. It's trying to get the same solution that matching algorithm would give you in an online setting by coming up with some strategy. The third thing to do is, if you're in one of these online settings and you're trying to recommend ads, how can you actually learn the function that says what ads is the user likely to enjoy or not? So how can you learn the user's preference model? So just a simple example to show why this is important. Imagine you have some user, you've shown them a bunch of ads, most of which they probably haven't clicked on, and eventually they click on some car ad. And what should you do in the future? You know, they like car ads at least a little bit, so one strategy would just be to show car ad after car ad after car ad. It's the only thing you know for sure they like, so might as well keep on recommending that. Yeah? And it's not hard to see why that's not a very good strategy. So, for one, if you just keep showing the same ad again and again and again, the person is presumably going to become less and less likely to click it. They clicked it once, maybe they then bought a car, then they're going to click on another car ad again. Otherwise, they're just going to become bored with the content, they're going to move on. Doesn't matter, whatever. There are going to be diminishing returns for just repeatedly recommending the same thing. Secondly, you've got no revenue after recommending a million car ads. You've also learned nothing about what else the user might like. So it's a pretty poor strategy. And what you'd actually need to correct this is to somehow recommend ads that you think the user likes sometimes, and at other times, try to find out what else the user might like. So this is kind of what you call an exploration-exploitation trade-off. And this is kind of analogous. Well, it's not really analogous, but you can imagine that it's analogous to how you would play the slot machines in a casino. So real casinos don't work like this, but imagine that in some casino, some slot machines were lucky and others were unlucky. Probably all slot machines are equally unlucky, right? I don't know. But you can imagine you have some row of slot machines you're trying to play, and you'd like to maximize your expected reward for playing them. Then you need to do two things. You've got to play the lucky one, but you've also got to figure out which ones are lucky and which ones aren't. So how are you going to come up with a strategy for doing that? You're going to sometimes need to play different machines to sort of assess their level of luckiness, and sometimes you'll just sit at the machine you already believe or know is the most lucky and just keep playing that one. So that's where this notion of a banded algorithm is going to come from, which is essentially this set of schemes for capturing this exploration-exploitation trade-off in order to try and maximize revenue or reward or something like that. Okay, so the setup looks kind of like this. We have K bandits, or really they're going to be K advertisements, and we have a bunch of rounds in which we get to choose one of these slot machines to play on. And we'd like to, you know, pull one arm in each round, and we'd like to pull the arm that's going to maximize our total reward. Okay? But of course, you don't see what the reward's going to be. You can't just go through here and pick out the ones. You see nothing. So you're going to need to choose a strategy for selecting these arms such that your expected reward is maximized. So you've got to simultaneously learn the reward function and maximize it. Okay, so that's slot machines. Hopefully it's not too hard to see how this relates to advertisements. Really, this is the problem describing just one user and their personal preferences to ads. So each slot machine is kind of an ad or a type of ad, and we'd like to learn which slot machines are lucky, so which kind of ads is the user likely to click on. So we'll just assume it's like a fixed function. There's maybe the user has a higher chance of returning one for this ad and a lower chance of returning one for this ad, and that's what we've got to learn. Okay, so all we see, of course, is the reward we get for playing some strategy. So we pick one arm at each round, and we learn a little bit about which of these arms are, or which of these ads are good ones to recommend to the user, and we'd like to choose the strategy that gives us the largest number of ones. Make sense? Great. Okay, so here's the setup. It's a lot of notation, but actually not that much going on. So we have some number of slot machines or a number of advertisements. We have some number of rounds we're going to play or a number of ads that we recommend to the user one after the other. At each, for each ad and for each round, we have some reward that we would receive. Simplest case, it could just be 0 or 1, whether they clicked on it or didn't, or it could be the revenue they gave. So that's really just this big function here. Of course, we don't observe the complete function. We don't observe this matrix of values. All we get to do is pick at each round some arm. So that's L sub the round. So this would be 1, 2, 5, 5, 1, 4, 6, 7, 7. This is really capturing our strategy that we chose. And all we get to see is not this full matrix, but the values of this matrix indexed by the arm chosen by our strategy. Okay, so just, I think the last picture is an easier way to see what's going on. And what we'd like to do is minimize what's called the regret. So lots of notation, very simple concept here. We have This is the strategy we chose for the rounds 1 to n. How much reward did our arm give us? If you think of that as being a random variable, you can say what's the expected reward the arm gave us. So if this arm pays out 70% of the time, we can say, well, what we'd expect to get 0.7 each time we pulled that arm. So we can say, given the true values of each of these arms, what's the expected reward our strategy gave us versus what is the reward that the best possible strategy, if we knew everything, would give us. So if we chose the best possible arm at every single step, how well would that work? And we just like to minimize the separation between these two things, much like with the competitive ratio. We'd like the sort of heuristic or the strategy we chose to come as close as possible to the strategy we would have if we knew everything. Okay, so we'd like to come up with a strategy that gives us the highest expected reward. For the moment, we're not going to assume that users and their preferences or anything change over time. They might later. We're just going to assume that a user has a static but different preference for each possible ad that could be shown. We'd like to learn that constant function. Okay, so a few strategies. The simplest one is called epsilon first. It's really straightforward. We're just going to, for the first several rounds, we'll play completely at random, and then we'll just say that's going to teach us how well each of the arms work. After we've done random play for a while, we know which are the good ads and which are the bad ads, so just show the good one forever afterwards. So for the first epsilon times n steps, you choose randomly. The first one and the last 1 minus epsilon times n steps, you choose optimally. So these are really exactly our explore and our exploit phases. Really here, during the explore phase, where we're learning the reward function, and then we've learned the reward function, we say we know it, and we just play whatever the best reward is from then on forever. Okay, so what does the reward function actually look like? It's a pretty simple formula. So the expected reward for an arm K is equal to the sum over the first epsilon n steps of did we choose arm K during that step times what reward did we get if we chose arm K. So that's how much arm K paid out during the first epsilon n steps. The question, other question is how often we played arm K. Okay, so it's a pretty straightforward function there. We're just saying how much reward did we get for arm K versus how many times did we play arm K. That's what we kind of learn during our explore phase. During the exploit phase, all we do is just take the argmax of this thing with respect to K. Pick the best arm, pick whichever arm gave us the highest reward during the explore phase. Okay, that's it. That's our sort of trivial explore-exploit algorithm. A better one, or maybe not as good a one, but maybe one that seems better, would be to do kind of the same thing, but not to do all of our exploration first and then all of our exploitation, but to distribute our exploration and exploitation throughout time. So sometimes with probability epsilon, we'll choose an arm at random, and most of the time, epsilon could be usually going to be some small number like 0.1. Most of the time, it's probability 1 minus epsilon. We're going to choose whichever arm is best. So exactly the same thing in terms of the fraction of times that we explore versus exploit, except that rather than doing all of our exploration first, we spread our exploration out throughout the entire set of trials. So empirically, this actually doesn't work quite as well as just doing all of your exploration first. I think it's not that surprising. If you do all of your exploration first, you're going to get the most accurate possible expected reward function. Whereas trying to play optimally toward the beginning is not going to be very successful. And still, we have one other limitation to overcome. Is we have
which is that we have no idea of maybe the reward function is changing over time, or maybe it depends on some kind of context about the user or what they've seen before or something like that. Okay, so a few more strategies. One is to basically add a schedule into our algorithm. So maybe rather than doing all of our exploration first and then all of our exploitation, or maybe rather than just doing those, spreading those two things randomly throughout the entire period, maybe we'd like to do most of our exploration first and gradually do less and less later. So I don't know, set this to some initial value and have it asymptote. That's kind of going to give you a good balance between these two approaches. Getting a bit more complicated, maybe you'd like to alternate between exploration and exploitation. Sometimes you'd like to play the reward function you know works well. Sometimes you'd like to try and learn if maybe your reward function has changed. So this is going to be the first version of the algorithm that's kind of adaptive. It's kind of going to allow you to handle the reward function changing over time. So you might want to have some schedule here between epsilon and time where it goes up and down. And what's going to cause it to go up and down? We'll say we'll sort of keep track of our reward function. So this is our reward function that we're always computing. And we'll say if that reward function starts to change, then maybe my strategy is not good anymore. So if the reward function changes, then maybe I should do some more exploration. If the reward function stays the same, then maybe I should do more exploitation. So my expected reward, if it changes, I'm going to increase epsilon. And if it stays the same, I'm going to decrease epsilon. Okay, so that's going to allow us to build some strategy that's going to be adaptive in the sense that if whatever we thought was a good arm to pull, if it stops working eventually, we're going to say, well, time to explore again, time to play arms more randomly. Maybe I'll learn that some other arm is working now. So if you had some user who was just getting bored with the kind of ads you were showing them, this kind of strategy would learn that they have become bored in that genre of ads, and it will do some more exploration and maybe find what new class of ads they're interested in. Okay, so there are some sort of further extensions you can come up with to this. One is, I mean, what I've just shown actually is that your reward functions mightn't be static, so there might be some process that determines them. What's maybe most interesting if there's something like an adversarial process. I didn't talk about this because I don't know quite what relevance it would have to advertising, but there's a sort of adversarial bandit setting where you can kind of imagine you're pulling one of these levers, and every time you pull a lever and, I don't know, you go to the bathroom or something, the casino owner reorders all of the slot machines because he wants your strategy to fail. And you know he's reordered them, you just don't know how they've reordered them. So you have to come up with an optimal strategy knowing that the arms are being moved around or in some adversarial fashion, and they're trying to move them around to thwart you. You know, it's very interesting from learning theory perspective. I don't know what it's got to do with advertising, though, so I didn't really want to cover that. Also, of course, you can have not just, this should be curly brackets, I guess, not just binary reward functions, but it could be like a real number, and then you want to estimate some sort of probability distribution that says, for each of my arms, what is the distribution over rewards that it's likely to return? The other interesting extension is what's called a contextual bandit. So this is more relevant to advertising. So each time step could have some associated context. So it's not just whether the user is interested in a certain kind of ad or not. Maybe they're interested in certain kinds of ads sometimes, not other times, but in a predictable way. So maybe you can figure out what's the user's context, and that will tell you about what kind of ads they liked. So maybe the query the user typed is a kind of context. The user might be interested in ads for cars, but only if they typed in a query that's related to cars. And if they typed in a query about engagement rings, you don't want to recommend them the car ad. Or maybe maybe the previous ad they saw or the previous ad they clicked on would be a kind of context. If you just recommended them some ad that they didn't click on, that's context that tells you that recommending that ad again might be a bad idea, or something like that. And the point is, you'd like to incorporate that context into your estimate of the reward function. So kind of the simplest model is a linear contextual bandit, which is going to say that there's some features associated with each round that encapsulate this context. And sort of in a linear contextual bandit, you would say that my reward function for arm k at round t is going to be to some linear function of those features. So this would allow you to capture some fairly simple properties like the compatibility between advertisement k and the context at time t. So, you know, this is your car advertisement arm, this is your feature vector, and then multiplying the features by the parameters could measure to what extent is this query or this context relevant to car advertisements. Okay, and then you've got to simultaneously estimate, you've got to come up with the optimal strategy and also learn what is the relationship between reward and context. Okay, so that's bandits, at least for advertising. They are applied to a whole bunch of other application areas. One is clinical trials. So you have a bunch of drugs that you might like to use to attempt to cure some ailment. You don't quite know which drugs work and which don't. So most of the time you'd like to give people the drug that you believe works best, but some fraction of the time you'd like to choose the riskier treatments in the hope that you'll learn the extent to which the other drugs work well, and maybe they'll prove to be the better ones in the future. Same kind of thing for sort of resource allocation and portfolio design problems. So, you know, imagine you're a manager and you want to assign person power to projects, or maybe you're just a single person, you'd like to allocate your own time to a bunch of projects. You don't know how much each project is going to pay out. You only find that out if you actually invest the time in it. So you'd like to come up with some strategy for assigning people to projects or assigning your time to projects such that you'll get the best reward. Same kind of thing for portfolio design. You'd like to invest in some ventures. You don't know which ones will succeed. I mean, I guess this version of the problem only matters if your investment is what actually causes it to succeed. So you have to invest the money to find out whether the investment was good or not. And you'd like to come up with an investment strategy that's going to maximize your return or something like that. And another good one is adaptive network routing. So you'd like to route packets through a network. You don't see how long it takes to route a packet to a network unless you attempt to route it in some way. So sometimes you'd like to route it through what you believe to be the shortest paths. Other times you'd like to test other paths to see if they might be quicker. And of course this matters a lot if it's adaptive, so at different times different paths are going to be better than others, and we'd like to come up with a routing strategy by exploiting the same exploitation trade-off. Okay? There's a funny story that I learned from Wikipedia, which is another application of bandits. So this was invented for some kind of resource allocation problem by the Allies during the war, and they found the math so intractable that they said they should just drop the problem definition on Axis territory. It'll cause their scientists to waste time on it. So I don't know that they did that. Okay, so that's about it on bandits. I'll make you sit through a quick case study, not one of my own papers, but another fun paper. This is not actually about ad recommendation, but about blog recommendation. It could just as well be ads, but they happen to have a blog data set. The reason I thought this would be a fun case study is because it just has a bunch of the same problems that we've seen. You want to recommend a bunch of blog posts to people rather than ads, then you've got to solve a lot of the same problems. So you've got to filter content to find what's relevant. You've got to come up with some notion of coverage. You can't just find whatever topic they like most and show them a million blogs in that topic. You need to sort of have some budget for topics where you want to cover a lot of different topics as well as possible. And you also need to have an online algorithm that's going to like respond to user feedback and learn to personalize things. So it kind of has a lot of the same characteristics as our matching or our Bandit or our AdWords type algorithms have, even though it's about blog recommendation. Okay, so that's kind of our goal. We want to do personalized online recommendation of blog posts to people. We'd like to have some kind of trade-off between exploitation and exploration in the sense that we want to recommend content the user likes, and we'd also like to cover a wide variety of topics so that we can learn about other things the user might like too. Okay, so to solve the first of these problems, we need to filter some huge amount of blog posts to find what's relevant. So, you know, we have good techniques like TF-IDF weighting or whatever from our text mining days that can tell us amongst some huge set of topics or some huge corpus what are the relevant entities in that corpus. So you can extract things like noun phrases and named entities and things like that. And you'll learn that the importance of various topics in a bunch of blog posts are kind of the words that have high weight here. Secondly, you want to maximize coverage. This is kind of the matching algorithm type problem. Even though Obama and Washington and US and US and United States and Chicago are important topics, you don't want to recommend all of those things because they're all kind of the same thing again and again and again. So you'd like to kind of allocate your recommendations equitably amongst the different topics. And the third thing is you want to personalize. So you recommend these blog posts, and the user's going to say which ones they liked or didn't like, and then you'd like to kind of reweight these things to match what the user wants. So, you know, obviously, I forget what period, I think this is 2009 or something that this research was done when Obama and Bush were simultaneously still in the news and something else about Gaza, I forget what. So yeah, I mean, even this whole paper is talking about the blogosphere, which I think is fortunately a term which has gone from the English language, but they're using some big data that they've collected of blogs, and they'd like to compare it to other blog aggregation systems. So these are mostly non-personalized systems that crawl a bunch of blogs and recommend some set of articles that covers them. Sort of covers the space of what's going on. Okay, so what do they do to achieve this? First, they extract a bunch of low-level features. These are pretty much the same sort of things we saw in week 6 and 7 when we looked at text, like bags of words that are weighted by their relevance and noun phrases and named entities. And those are going to pull out things like Barack Obama and Washington and you know, Afghanistan and 9/11 and Iraq and so on and so forth. They also use high-level features. So same kind of ones we saw with dimensionality reduction in text. I think they just use a good old vanilla topic model, which they run on their blog posts. And that finds there's a bunch of different topics, which consists of sets of words that are used in a similar context. So this is kind of one topic about US politics. This is another topic, which is about various wars or something. And you can then measure for each document the extent to which it covers this small set of topics. And what they'd like then is to maximize coverage. So this is very similar to our bipartite matching problem in the sense that we've built our set of features which says what are the representative set of topics that are currently being discussed. And we'd like to kind of cover all of the topics with a small number of posts. We want to recommend not many posts. We want each of these different topics that we've discovered to be discussed about equally. But choose a small set of documents that maximally cover, in this case, just all the features, but later on, the particular features the user is actually interested in. So you can come up with some coverage function, which says how important is each feature, and how much is that feature covered by some set of documents. And they use a simple kind of greedy algorithm to get a good amount of coverage where they just, you know, first pick the document with the most coverage and then second pick the document that best covers the things that are left over And that's kind of a greedy way of solving this type of matching problem. It has that very familiar-looking approximation ratio. And sort of even this simple thing gives you a pretty good algorithm. It still has absolutely no personalization whatsoever, but it's going to identify a set of blog posts that cover the full set of relevant features that are being discussed across the whole corpus. So you get something on Israel, something on the Super Bowl, something on celebrities, and something on politics, who knows, to the extent that you'd like to read about all those things at the same time. So the next thing to do is to kind of personalize this a little bit better. So we'd like to learn that different users have a different preference weighting toward different topics, or they're more likely to click on them or give them a thumbs up or something like that. And we'd like to learn this with some simple online algorithm. So we're going to need to come up with some personalized feature weight for each user. And now rather than maximizing coverage, we're going to maximize personalized coverage. So exactly the same algorithm, but we're sort of downweighting the coverage or upweighting the coverage only if it's covering features that this user cares about. And if we're two different users, we can learn that one person cares about government but not about celebrities and sports, and one only cares about sports but not about the government or celebrities. Okay, so they're going to use a very, very simple online algorithm to do this. If you thumbs up a post, we'll just upweight all of the features that that post covers. If you thumbs down or maybe you ignore a post, we'll just downweight the features associated with that post. Or I guess if you do nothing, we can just gradually have the weights revert to the global mean. So it looks something like this. You get some recommendation of blog posts. You give binary feedback, thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral. Initially, we start off with every feature having the same weight, and based on your feedback, we'll upweight or downweight the features you liked or the features that are present in documents you liked or did not like. Okay, so that's about this simple algorithm. That's really how it works. You can see more details in the paper. Basically, I just wanted to show an example of some relatively complicated system that uses a combination of a whole bunch of things that we've seen throughout the class. So it uses some NLP techniques to find important words in documents and some dimensionality reduction techniques to discover topics, and it uses some coverage techniques to handle things like budgets between users and content, and it uses some kind of online algorithm to learn users' preferences. So even though it's about blogs, it's very similar to the kind of topics we've been seeing in the last few weeks. And there's a nice evaluation on some real blog data and some real blog aggregation systems to show that the personalization actually works. Okay, so that's about it for online advertising. I'll let you go home to your family soon. So essentially, we saw kind of three key ways where advertising is different from things like recommendation and classification and regression. One is this idea of handling budgets between the users and the content. Another is that we need to be able to make recommendations in an online fashion as users or queries come one at a time. And the third is this idea that if we want to learn users' preferences in an online fashion, we need...
This has been a UC San Diego podcast. For more, visit podcast.ucsd.edu.